You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are talking
while married.
But it looks like the horses are getting into the gates and getting ready for the race.
Well, yes, they are. And the newest horse's name is
Kamala Harris.
And you and I are confused on that pronunciation because I've heard her called Kamala. So I don't know what's right, but I prefer Kamala. It's easier to say. So that's what we'll say.
Yeah, I agree. So anyway, the new vice presidential choice by Joe Biden is an interesting one, certainly a controversial one. But you know, Linda, I think that anybody that Biden would have selected for the position as a running mate for the vice presidency of the United States would have been controversial. If you take a look at the four or five women that he had picked out, all of them had one controversy or another, and they all had baggage. And a lot of political candidates do. But for my mind, on many different levels, I think that she is the worst qualified of all of the candidates.
Well, I don't disagree. I think she's got the most personality of all of the candidates that he could have picked or that he had in his stable to pick.
Well, divine personality for
that.
No, what
do you mean? She's very motivated. She can be very cheerful appearing. Here's how I see her. Honestly, I see her as somebody with a very cheery and happy face, and she will stab you in the back the minute that you turn around. She's scary to me for that. But the other thing about her is I don't like how she came up to where she is. She plays a game with politics. So she's not here for all of us. This is a big game to her. It's about her ego. It's about her winning, and it always has been. It's not about the people and the choices that she has made with regards to people and the decisions that she's made, both when she was attorney general and when she had different career. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, you know, you're a Southern California gal and I'm a Northern California guy, and I did my whole career in the San Francisco Bay Area. And so I was a detective when she was district attorney of the city and county of San Francisco. And so she was despised by the law enforcement community in the city of San Francisco and in the San Francisco Bay Area. So that was her first real claim to fame, you know, getting, winning the position of district attorney in San Francisco.
Yeah, and she's just as somebody that I have never trusted. And so, but the three main people that Joe Biden had to pick from or said he was picking from, they all had baggage. They all had reasons that we didn't want them. I have thought for a long time, and you and I had a bet about that it would be Kamala Harris.
And I lost. I said it was going to be Susan Rice.
And it could have been. So I'll have to figure out what I win, because we never decided what I win.
Oh, well, that's just one of those marriage bets.
Oh, no. You know? Oh, that's no fun. Well, anyway, so she has some issues in the campaign when she went up against Joe Biden. You know, she accused him of being a racist. And she wanted an apology on the debate stage from him about him being a racist. Of course, he didn't give her that.
Because then he'd have to admit, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of truth to that, that he has certainly been in the camp of segregationists and so forth in his history. The other things that she's done, you know, just recently, she said that she believed the women that said that Joe Biden touched them inappropriately. So she really apparently doesn't care about her morals when there's, a better paycheck and a better ego position to take.
Well, let me step in there with that, because that kind of goes part and parcel with her, if you want to call it a law enforcement career. Because, you know, people say, and I mean, legally speaking, they're correct. She was a top cop, which means that in a state, the top police officer or peace officer is the attorney general. The top cop in the United States is not the director of the FBI. It is William Barr, who is the attorney general. Okay. But that being said, I find her as being very hypocritical, because whereas she is very anti-law enforcement, she has put more than her number, people of color behind bars and in prison, right? And by the way, that is what you are supposed to do to any person of color, meaning white, black, Hispanic, Asian, you name it, if they commit crimes and they are convicted by the
prior fact. Any person of any color.
Exactly.
Exactly.
But that being said, in talking directly about what you're talking about with the Kavanaugh hearings, if anybody should know that you do not make a credibility determination, that is a trier of fact issue, and it must be based on objective facts, is her, okay? Because she's been a DA, she's been a state attorney general, and she was in the Senate subcommittee hearings on the confirmation of Brett Kavanaugh to the United States Supreme Court. And when she says, oh, well, I just believe the women, well, wait a minute, that's a credibility determination. Where were the objective provable facts?
But and there also, were none. She also said she believed the women spoke against Biden.
I know.
Yeah.
So, but that's another credibility determination.
Another one, right. Yeah. Those are all assumptions that with no facts. Although there are a lot of pictures of Joe Biden touching people rather inappropriately.
I'd say circumstantially and all of that. But I mean, I don't want to get into that. I just wanted to mention that if anybody should know what the position of the trier of fact is versus a person that's involved in an investigation or a probative inquiry, it should be her. I don't make credibility determinations. I follow the facts and evidence. But let me just say this, because I want to hear your opinion more, especially because you're a woman and this is a female that's running for high office. And that is that Ms. Harris has the least amount of experience. She's only been a state senator or United States senator, actually state senator for just a few years.
Well, she went into the Senate and she immediately ran for president. Immediately.
That's right. And she also has zero international exposure. She has zero international experience. Whereas Joe Biden, when he was vice president of the United States, he had a ton of it. I mean, you can dislike what he did and the policies of the Obama administration internationally, which were a shambles. But at least the guy has international experience. And you think that a vice president who is going to be, besides the Secretary of State, he's going to be the guy that bounces around the world and, you know, sells the United States of America.
Well, one of the reasons I think that he picked her is because she used to work closely when she was Attorney General with his son, Beau.
So, I remember that.
Yeah. So I think that really swayed him. Interesting that she came out against him in the debates the way that she did, though, because she was pretty rude to him during the debates. I see her as a kind of an empty shell. I don't think she has a lot of substance behind her for this particular job. And what is very scary to me is Joe Biden. I don't know that he'll make it. If he becomes president, I don't know that he'll make it his 4 years. And if he doesn't, to think of her as president is very, very scary. She is very radical left. She is the most radical left candidate we have ever had as for a president.
A vice president, right. I absolutely agree.
In the United States.
Yeah.
And she has co-authored the Green New Deal, which is also to me very, very scary, would dramatically change our way of life. She is for a system of Medicare for all.
She's an Obama follower for Medicare for all, right?
Right. And, she's for raising taxes, and she is also for giving some sort of relief to people that have student loans. So, she's singing the right song for being on the left right now. And, we're going to see how the American people feel about this. I am anxious to see a debate between Vice President Pence and Kamala Harris.
Yeah, so am I. Our old buddy Bernie Sanders
Yep.
Is not in favor of her being picked as the VP?
Well, it was not his choice, but he did come out and, go ahead and back that choice, because I think he has to. But a lot of the people that were Sanders fans and supporters, they are not in favor of her.
Yeah, but I think they're going to fall into lockstep with everybody else, and they'll vote for him if it becomes a Trump-Pence versus Biden-Harris ticket.
You know, there's something that niggles at me, Ron, and it bothers me, and I wonder if it bothers other American people of any color. We as white people, right, have been accused of being, not you and I, but well, white
and
people.
And speak for yourself. Yeah, I'm Italian. Okay. But, Karen.
No, thank you. We have been, you already forgot my name. We have been accused of being racist. All white people have been accused of being racist. It's systemic, right? If we had insisted that he pick a white male or a white female, doesn't really matter, we would have been racist.
Oh, absolutely. However, there's no doubt about that.
When a group of people, and not just a group of people, but Joe Biden himself, made it a point that he would only pick a woman of color, why is that not racist? Wouldn't you want to pick the very best candidate to be vice president of the United States rather than picking somebody, anybody, by their gender and their color?
You know, one of the things I love about you is that you are always consistent with your message. Okay, I look at this message and, you know, you wrote a column quite some time ago because I think somebody said or asked you, what do you think about a woman for the presidency?
Yes,
or Biden? You said, hey, I don't care who it is as long as it's the best possible candidate. So I follow you, you know, right away. I don't think she's the best possible candidate, but this is all about political strategy. And, you know, you notice that everybody that was on the platform running for the Democratic Party nomination for president of the United States was slinging dirt on everybody else, and they were all dogpiling on Biden. But every single one of them, including Bernie Sanders, who's probably the most vociferous of them, besides Kamala Harris, they're all in lockstep behind Biden. You're not seeing a single one, and they're going to every single one of the people that ran against him for the nomination. And I mean, you know, of course, the nomination takes place at the convention, but everybody knows how that's going to go. But everybody has got good things to say about Biden now, even though it was pretty, you know, claws and teeth at the time. And everybody is in favor of Kamala Harris as the vice president nominee. And so I think it's a foregone conclusion where this thing's going to go.
Well, you know, I mean, even Elizabeth Warren would have been a better pick, I think, just because of her. She has more knowledge, more time in the Senate, more time, you know, in politics, understanding. I just see Kamala Harris as somebody with a large ego that wants to get ahead, and she loves this adulation that she's getting. And that's just how I see it. I don't see her as a serious student of politics.
Okay, but let's go back and let's talk political strategy for a minute, and let's just talk about the realities of life. Okay, the realities of life to me, and I think a lot of other Americans, is that Joe Biden is old. Okay, and some would argue that he's somewhat infirmed. And, you know, he's like sleepy Joe Biden.
Yes.
Right. And so you need a young, gregarious, you know, and in this case, a black female, because he wanted a black female. But Harris is young. She's gregarious. She's a fighter. Just like you said, isn't that what a campaign really needs to put fire into the belly of the audience?
Well, it is. But for me, I would like to see somebody who has very sincere beliefs in what they are saying and doing and reasons for them. And I don't see that with either of them. I see it, nobody can deny that President Trump, when he was campaigning, had a set of beliefs and he stood by them. He knew what they were. He articulated them. He made them clear to everybody. He said what he was going to do and he did it. Neither one of these people, Biden or Harris, have that kind of articulated set of beliefs that are consistent with their past, that gives us a look at what our future would be.
No, I totally agree with you. And I believe that's referred to politically as a platform. And the Democratic Party, to my knowledge and belief, does not have an articulable platform. It's sort of vague and ambiguous. It's sort of like not, well, it's not sort of, it's not spelled out, just like you said. And aren't we coming up pretty close to the convention?
Yeah. And here's...
And with no platform?
Here's what their platform is, in my opinion. They're going back to Lyndon Johnson and the Great Society, which is how we really got into a lot of this mess in the first place. And Lyndon Johnson, who figured out that when you give people money, they vote for you. That is what these two people, that is their platform. It's you know, reduce the student loans, give everybody health care, raise the taxes, give more, take the cops away, you know, defund, do all these things that are going to irreparably harm America and Americans. But the people who want that free money, especially in the time of a pandemic, when we're all suffering from having no money, you know, this is just very disturbing to me.
Well, I want to hear, you know, as part of their platform, what are you going to do with China, who I think is our biggest enemy and certainly an adversary? What are you going to do with Russia? I'm waiting. I'm going to love to hear this part because, you know, the Democrats have been, you know, bouncing on Trump ever since and even before he won the office of the presidency. And I want to know what their strategy is with Russia. I want to know what their strategy is with China. I want to know what their international strategy is. I want to know what their military and defense strategy is. I want to know what their infrastructure strategy is. You know, I want to know all of that stuff. I want to know how Joe Biden, other than stealing ideas from the Trump administration, how he and Harris are going to knock down this pandemic and bring us all back to work. Well, I want to know that.
I'll tell you who's going to be writing the screenplay for all this is Barack Obama, because Joe Biden doesn't have an independent thought of his own. And Kamala Harris has the thoughts to do whatever it takes to get elected, say whatever it takes, do whatever it takes, and after that, it doesn't matter. That's how I feel.
No, and I agree with you. And we'll be a couple of prominent flies on the wall and following it all the time on Talking While Married. How about your first cup of coffee?
I'm ready.
Spreading the out loud truth from sea to shining sea. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world. To unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. We are the vision of the voices. Welcome to the new era in communications. America Out Loud Talk Radio.
But I brought you some coffee, but I'm having an Arnold Palmer because it's still pretty warm out here. So I want to talk about now the looting in Chicago. $60 million worth of damage and thefts. And all on the area of Michigan and State, and then, you know, which they call the Miracle Mile. You and I have enjoyed in past years visiting Chicago, and it's a wonderful town. I love the architecture. I love the great restaurants. You know, we're not shoppers. So, I mean, we've walked past all those high-end stores, the Gucci's, the Louis Vuitton, the Tesla, you know, all the jewelry stores. You know, I mean, all of that, Tiffany's, all of that kind of stuff. But we're not shoppers, but we are people that love that area of Chicago. And if you saw all the news videos in the news segments about thousands of people going down there, Black Lives Matter going down there and busting up the whole place, right? Smashing the windows. And it was very well organized, Linda, because there were, you know, caravans of cars that would pull out, unload a bunch of people. They would smash windows, grab stuff, throw it in the vehicle, whoop, and then that vehicle, you know, takes off. I mean, that's not spontaneous stuff. That's all trained and planned stuff. So I just wanted to kind of hear your thoughts about that, because I've got more to say.
Well, I think that, you know, they've let this whole situation in Chicago go for entirely too long. And then, of course, it escalates, especially when they see these things happening in New York and in Portland and Seattle and all these other Minnesota, Minneapolis, all these other places. So, of course, they're going to go ahead and look at doing the same thing. It is definitely just a bunch of thugs out there who, you know, want free stuff. And then you have somebody from, where was the lady from? You know,
so she's the chapter president of Black Lives Matter in Chicago, and that's Ariel Atkins. And so she was doing a lot of the talking, doing the news coverage and holding a press conference of sorts. And basically what she's doing in her comments is justifying the looting, you know, the damage, the damage and the looting to all of the stores in downtown Chicago, right, which is ridiculous.
She says that they can take whatever they want. And then in another comment, she says, well, you know, in this time of COVID, people don't have jobs. They need to take these things to eat. No. These are not people that are getting Louis Vuitton bags so that they can eat. This is just exactly what it is. It's people who just want to break and steal and, you know, cause mayhem. That's all it is.
Well, let me throw something in here, because, you know, in my now best-selling book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police, which is on my website at drronmartinelli.com, I talk about the Black Lives Matter movement being an avowed Marxist, militant, and black separatist organization that is not only in the United States, Linda, but it's international, and it's part of what they refer to as the global movement, which is called One World, One Order. And this is a giant, what we are seeing downtown, it has Chicago and in these other cities, it has nothing to do with social justice. It has nothing to do with Black Lives Matter. It has everything to do with class warfare, class struggle. They are ripping off the rich area, the high-end area of Chicago. They're ripping them off and they're stealing. And Ariel Atkins pretty much justifies the looting, because she said, you have looted our futures, and so we are going to loot you. If that doesn't tell you that that's Marxist class struggle rhetoric, I don't know what does.
Well, I'll tell you what, I've been to Chicago many times. I've been on that Miracle Mile many times, and there are many, many people of color working there. So we are not, those stores are not we, because I don't work there, but those stores are not looting their future. Their future is being looted by all of the gunfire and
the gangs, drugs,
all of the things that we see day to day to day. Now, how this particular event started was that the police shot a young man who shot at them.
That's right. And I believe they now that he was killed in that shootout. And they did recover a gun. I believe he was about 20 years old. But he provoked and he shot at the police, Linda.
Did he pass away? Because last I heard he was just wounded, but I don't know.
It doesn't matter. You know, it really doesn't matter. He shot at the police.
Yes.
They didn't shoot at him to initiate this encounter. He had a gun. They tried to stop him. He ran. He started shooting at the officers. And in defense of their own life, in defense of others, they returned fire.
Yes. So here's the hypocrisy here. How many people have died by one another's hands in Chicago to date this year, approximately?
To date, approximately, there have been about 430 people, of which 95% were people of color shooting other people of color, okay. Not the police.
Yet they weren't rioting over that.
No.
But the police, who have only shot 8 people, killed 5 in the entire year in Chicago, had to shoot somebody who was shooting at them and could have hit somebody else as well. And they go and they use that as an excuse to riot. Is this not hypocritical? I mean, does anybody else see this problem, that the other 430 lives didn't matter, but this one does?
Right. And you know, and it's always Black Lives Matter. And I wrote about this in the book. I mean, every time that they pick a so-called victim, the guy is a serious suspect. Okay. It's not even close. These are not innocent Black people being shot by the police. Okay. That's not what this is. And as a matter of fact, so far this year, people of color in Chicago shooting other people of color have shot, killed 144 times more people of color than the police, and they have wounded 85 times more people than the police. Okay, those are the real statistics.
The narrative that they're putting out right now is that Lori Lightfoot is not saying enough against the police officers about this shooting. Lori Lightfoot did, for the first time, I think, that I've seen her really come out and strongly say that this looting has nothing to do with any of the reasons that they're giving, and that this has to stop. Now, what I haven't seen enough of is Lori Lightfoot coming out and saying that all of that shooting that we just talked about, over 2,000 people shot,
almost 2,500 now.
Over 400 killed. There's not a peep out of most of them. But here's what got their attention. That Miracle Mile is their moneymaker in Chicago.
Absolutely. Where do you think the tax base comes from?
Yeah, that is their tax revenue. And so now they're mad. Now, if you have these stores start pulling out, what are you going to have? You're going to have a lot of people of color that live in that neighborhood, of all colors, of every race.
Out of work.
Okay. They're all going to be out of work. You're going to have stores shuttered. You're going to have tourism drop. You're going to have people's income drop. I mean, this is the worst possible scenario. Somebody's got to get their arms around this.
No, absolutely. And you know, Linda, there is no tourism going on right now in Chicago, because if you paid attention, in order to try to contain people, they raised the bridges over the Chicago River. Okay, so they literally, like it's a castle, it's the siege mentality, it's the moat. I think you mentioned they need to throw some alligators in there.
They need to throw alligators
okay.
in that moat.
But they've literally got the bridges up, and they stopped all traffic. There is nothing going on. And let me ask you a question. I mean, you and I love Chicago, okay? You introduced me to Chicago.
I've introduced you to all the fine things in your life,
well,
Dr. Martinelli.
I appreciate that, Mrs. Martinelli. But aside from that, my darling, would you go to Chicago today? As a tourist?
No.
Would you go next week?
Oh, no.
No. And I appreciate the honest answer. And you are just like hundreds of thousands of other people that would have thought about going to Chicago this time of year. It's a little bit humid, but it's still a really cool town. But you're not going to go, are you? Because you're scared of going. And so look at the hundreds of millions of dollars in tax revenue that the city of Chicago loses. And they can't spend that in the communities where there are high percentages of people of color. So there are literally these people that are looting or shooting themselves in the foot, so to speak.
Yeah, they absolutely are. Because if you've ever been there and you've walked up and down that street, there are people of all different races there.
Right. Absolutely.
It is not one race. So you've hurt everybody equally. And that, I mean, this is just a bad situation. But this is a situation that is happening in so many places right now, Ron.
Yeah.
In New York City, in Seattle, in Portland, in Boston.
And Washington, D.C. But you know what? Okay, so who comes from Chicago? Barack Obama. Okay? And have you heard a peep out of Barack Obama about this? Have you heard anything from the Reverend Jesse Jackson? Or how about Al Sharpton? How about the so-called black leaders? Are you hearing anything about this from these people? You're not hearing a peep. It's like crickets chirping.
The only
So where's the leadership?
There is no leadership. The only things that I do hear are people that are justifying all of these actions, and not just in Chicago, but in all of these cities. And there is no justification. Everybody who is standing up and justifying these actions is full of manure.
And you know what? We've been talking about, you know, Kamala Harris. She was asked about this, and she just dodged the entire question.
That is her expertise. That is actually her expertise.
It is her expertise.
Everybody
I'm glad you brought that up.
Who has run against her and debated against her has said the same thing, that she is an expert at dodging questions.
Yeah, but she's also supposed to be an expert at law enforcement and the rule of law, because she's an attorney. She's an attorney general, you know, a former attorney general. She was a former district attorney. So criminology, right, law, behavior, and the rule of law really are supposed to be her wheelhouse and not a peep out of her, okay? And you're right. She totally dodged the question. Hey, listen, in this same vein, I want to talk about Seattle and the chief of police in Seattle.
Carmen Best.
And she is resigning. Actually, she announced her retirement, and she said, I've had enough. What do you think?
You know, I don't blame her one bit. They reduced her salary something like 40%. They reduced her officers by 100 officers. They're going to do even more next year.
They want
year.
To cut 50%.
She said that it is about the lack of respect for herself and the officers. And she apologized to her officers. I feel badly for her. I just cannot believe that these cities, and so many, Ron, Seattle, Portland, Los Angeles, 19 cities have defunded their police departments in some way or another, and the results will not be good. This is a horrible social experiment.
You're exactly right. And so, you know, my question is, who's going to take that position? Well, they've got an acting chief right now that's going to be in that position. But who from the outside, knowing what everybody knows, is going to come in and take that job at a 40% pay cut, and you're losing 100 officers. You know, it was funny because Best was talking about last year, the city council voted over $1 million to recruit officers because there were so many officers leaving. And now there's going to be a ton of officers leaving. The whole defunding thing might work out because you are going to have less officers. And guess what? Nobody in their right mind is going to take a job in the city of Seattle. All right. So I think, well, other people will. They're going to have to go down to the bargain basement to try to find officers that are going to come to Seattle. And you get what you pay for. And when you've defunded officers and you drop your recruiting requirements, you're going to get high paid, you know, just higher paid security guards, but they are more susceptible to corruption. And I really worry about that. I would worry about the cartels coming in and paying off officers and running that town, or the mob coming in to Seattle and running that town.
You know, when you see the members in both Portland and Seattle, which you see fairly often, the politicians and the members of, say, city council and those people there, and when you see them speak, I just want to go up and say, what are you thinking? What on earth are you thinking? Because your thought mechanism is so out of whack for what the reality is. Do you even know what you're doing?
And you know, you're exactly right, because just the other day, they talked about what the vote was. And I can't remember how many people you have on the city council in Seattle, but one person voted against the defunding. Everybody else voted for it. But the person that voted against the defunding, they asked the person, the council person, why did you vote against the defunding? And they said, because they didn't cut enough. Okay, I wanted even more cuts to the Seattle Police Department, so I voted against it in protest. That underscores what you just said.
I don't understand why anybody would want to live there or have a business there or send their children to school there. I don't understand this mentality. And obviously, we're all different, which makes the world go round, but that is not my kind of place to live.
And there are literally tens of billions of dollars that are tied up in real estate and investment and in commerce in the downtown area of Seattle, where all of this stuff is happening. And I think they're going to move horizontally. I think they're going to move out of there because the insurance, here's what insurance doesn't pay for. And it's interesting because, Ariel Atkins in Chicago from Black Lives Matter is saying, loot all you want because the insurance is going to pay for it. Well, actually, the truth of the matter is insurance doesn't pay for those things, for insurrection, for, mass rioting, for stuff like that, unless you put a very expensive rider on your insurance. And the mom and pop stores and stuff like that, and in the middle income stores, they can't afford these atrociously expensive riders to, that would pay them if something like looting and major theft or arson happened at their business. They can't afford doing it.
The city of Seattle and the city of Portland are just beautiful cities, were just beautiful cities. And I know that the Nike headquarters is right near Portland in Beaverton.
Because you've been there.
I've been there. And I just can't even imagine like damaging that whole area and seeing what's going on there. And I can't even imagine the people. I don't know. Nike's gotten pretty leftist in my opinion, but so has all of them.
And you said that's a huge campus there,
huge
right?
Campus, but a great place to work, beautiful, well-kept. The damage up there is just very sad to me.
So, real quick, do you think these major corporations, these major businesses, and these high-end stores are going to move horizontally? What I mean by that is they're going to move out of the inner, the core, what I call the core downtown areas, and they're going to move way out to the suburbs, to the burbs. What do you think is going to happen?
I don't think Nike will. I think that their corporate culture kind of fits in with that whole mentality up there. But, we'll just have to see what happens because this has been going on for some time and it needs to stop.
Well, let me get you our last drink for the evening.
I'm ready.
Hi, I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli, forensic criminologist, death investigator, and host of A Thread of Evidence on America Out Loud. Are you a fan of CSI shows and documentaries? Are you fascinated with how death investigators like me solve high-profile death cases like you see on the news? If so, then I encourage you to join me as I unpack some of the most high-profile police and civilian-involved death cases in my best-selling book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police. Read all about the forensic evidence you never heard on the evening news. You can get a copy of my best-selling book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police, today by ordering it on my forensic site at www.dronmartinelli.com. dronmartinelli.com. And remember, without truth, there is no justice.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
To switch it up and stop talking about all the politics and the nasty things in life and talk about a few interesting things that, because there's more to life than politics and crime.
And violence.
That's it. Although somehow everything seems to have to do with both of those, doesn't it? Well, you know, I know that you don't know this, so I will tell you that World Elephant Day is upon us, and there are people in Zimbabwe who risk their lives to save elephants. Why do they do that? Because people poach elephants for their ivory.
Right, that's right. And by the way, in places like Zimbabwe, in other nations in Africa that have elephants, the tourism is their main economic stay. And so if the elephants are killed and they're poached, then the tourists won't come and they won't support, you know, the people, and they won't be able to support with their tourist dollars, you know, those countries, which are always full of, you know, starving people.
Well, and here's something really, really interesting. And I'm just so proud of these people. There is a group of local women from disadvantaged backgrounds, and they are called the Akashinga. And they are all women, and some of them are orphaned by AIDS or victims of domestic violence. And they undergo special forces type of training, and they protect an area of 115 square miles that have the elephants located in that preserve.
Wow.
From people and poachers coming in. And why do they use women? Because women tend to be better at de-escalating situations than men. And we've talked about that before. I think it's really interesting.
And by the way, if they're armed, did you know that women tend to be better shots with long guns than men do?
Oh, because we have a firearm school, I'm absolutely familiar with that. Women generally are better shots than men. And also the women are less likely to take bribes from poachers. And they reinvest 90% of their income in their families, as opposed to 35% with men. So 90% for the women, 35% with the men. I think they're out drinking or something.
That's exactly what they're doing.
But Zimbabwe lost about 11% of its elephants since 2005.
Wow, that's a lot of elephants.
And they lose about 8% of the savanna elephants, because there's different kinds of elephants.
Okay.
Every year due to poaching. So these women are out there, you know, I mean, doing a very, very important job. They're very disadvantaged women. And I just want to, you know, give them some kudos, because they're very, very brave. And, you know, they put their lives on the line to protect these animals. Well, another thing you may or may not know is that something you have not heard on the news that President Trump has done, which I really love, and that is that he has created the Great American Outdoors Act, and that is just being implemented. It's one of the most monumental and far-reaching conservation bills in half a century, and Donald Trump has just recently signed it. It will fund national parks and public lands for immediate relief of maintenance projects, so things that have been not being done are going to get done, and ongoing preservation and conservation.
Hey, can I say something about that really quick? Because I do work with, you know, park rangers have been doing it for years, state, municipal, and now federal. I do some work with the National Park Service. And people need to know, and of course, if you've ever been in our national parks and a lot of our state parks, they really need funding. They are so behind on the maintenance of
Absolutely.
Things that need to be done. You would be surprised. And as a matter of fact, it gets to the point where some of them are mismanaged because they don't have the funds necessary to, you know, keep up the trails, and if there's boating, to keep up the docks and the buildings and the campsites and all of that. So, you know, yahoo for President Trump working really hard to free up that money, because believe me, in our state and national parks, that is money well spent.
Well, and he has dedicated $9.5 billion to this, to the maintenance over just the next 5 years. It's not like over the next 20 years. It's over the next 5 years.
Well, they need it. They absolutely need it.
If you remember things like the Big Sur landslide and a lot of the fires in California, I mean, all of those things have damaged different park sites. So they're putting about $6.5 billion of that money to 419 different national park sites, and they have a $12 billion maintenance backlog. So $9.5 billion is going to really go a long way to resolving a lot of those issues.
And you know what? Let me say something too, especially with the state parks and the national parks, even more with the national parks. You know, with this COVID thing and a lot of the stuff that's going on, people have sort of a fear of flying, and they want to drive to more places. And Linda, I think you were making the comment just the other day that it's hard to buy an RV. Our RV sales are way up.
They're through the roof. That, you know, it's interesting, during COVID, some businesses are absolutely thriving. Not mine, but some businesses are absolutely thriving. And RV companies is one of them. Home sales are up. It's really interesting, some of the things that have been working for people. Tesla is up like crazy.
Yeah. Well, you know, RVs, and we have an RV, and our RV was essentially used to commute back and forth between our businesses in Texas and California with the dog, right? And call it the Desimobile. And now we are finally getting an opportunity to actually use our RV and go with our good friends, Dennis and Susan, and to go to different areas and different parks so we can enjoy the beauty of Texas. And we're talking about taking off and going up all the way to Oregon and doing some things like that. And I know we'll be staying in some state and national parks.
We have, or will not be going to Portland.
But we will not be going to Portland.
But you know, the other thing that's interesting about what you just said, getting an RV spot in a national park is very, very difficult now. They are taken for a long period of time, weeks or months out.
Exactly. You've got to really book far in advance.
Here's the really cool thing about this particular act, besides the fact that we're going to be working on our national parks, is that not any of the funds come from taxpayers' pockets. The funds come entirely from royalties on offshore drilling, gas, coal, and renewable energy production already being paid into the federal treasury.
And just to mention, if you go with the Green New Deal, all that money that would go to national parks would disappear.
Every bit of it. Isn't that interesting? The other thing to me that's really interesting about this is there is not a politician who would have thought of this. It took a businessman to think about how to put this together and get it done without costing the taxpayers any money.
I love it. I do too. I'm so glad that you brought this up. I didn't know anything about it. And that's why you got to have a businessman like Donald Trump in office.
It's honestly another reason to vote for him. And I'm not being political. I'm being just practical, because we get things done.
And nobody else thought of it.
Ever. And here's a bit more of kind of useless knowledge, but it's fun. You know, when we go to Florence, one of the things that we always see is the wine windows. They are mostly not used. They have them in Venice too, for sure. And what the wine windows are, windows in the walls of buildings from inside to outside. And somebody could, they put a metal plate through and you give them some money.
Well, it's like a lazy Susan. Some of them are like a lazy Susan.
Or they put a little plate through and you give them some money and they pass you a glass of wine. Well, these came from the 17th century when there was bubonic plague, and they were social distancing. Nobody wanted to touch each other and get the germs, and they would actually disinfect things with vinegar back in those days. They have brought the wine windows back, and I'm very excited about seeing those if we can ever get back to Italy.
You know, they're fantastic. You know, and I just want to correct you about one thing.
Okay.
Because when we went to Pompeii,
Yes.
That's where we first saw
the
wine windows, mm-hmm. right? And what's really cool, at least they did this in Pompeii, I don't know about Florence, but the way it was explained to us in Pompeii, they always used the same types of cups or chalices to hold the wine, you know, all made of clay, and they were relatively cheap, right? So if they broke, no big deal. But you would take, you would put your money down in the Lazy Susan or in the wine window, and you would get your wine, and then you would walk down the street to the next one, and you would turn that one in, and they would give you a fresh one, right? You put your coin in, and they give you a fresh
one. It's a little bit different now, because they in Florence, they used flasks, and you could, you know, just get your wine that way. Now, they're actually serving gelato, coffee, wine, cocktails through these windows so that people don't have to touch each other. And of course, as you recall, Italy was very hard hit by COVID. So it's really fun to see this, that they're coming back with these, and I can't wait to go.
And Florence is like our favorite city in Italy. It is a drop-dead gorgeous city, and I even wrote one of my Wade Justice thrillers about the city of Florence.
You can't go wrong in Florence. I mean, the food, the drink, the atmosphere,
the people. Amazing. And you can walk the whole city. Well, not the whole city, but all the good parts of the city. In other words, where are all the historic things and everything in Florence? Pretty much, you can walk most of that within, I think, 45 minutes.
Oh, absolutely. So, you know, speaking of COVID, not that we were, but COVID is kind of there every day in the background of our lives, and it doesn't seem to be going away anytime soon. I was reading an article in Inc. magazine, which I thought was kind of interesting, and I actually agree with it. There's a lot in Inc. magazine I don't agree with. So this was something that I thought was interesting, because it says that the pandemic may be changing your personality. That's what psychologists say, and not necessarily in bad ways. And, you know, your personality generally doesn't change through life, but it definitely can because of different things that happen in life. So your personality can change, and you can adapt to different situations. And the COVID has brought a big life shift to a lot of people, a lot of people's careers, a lot of people. Over 100,000 small businesses have permanently closed already. I mean, that's a big life change, right? So you're bound to have some sort of effects to your personality. So during the lockdown, when everybody had to stay home and they weren't at work, that affects different people in different ways. Would you agree?
I do.
And sometimes you have a really good experience with staying home, and sometimes you don't have a good experience with staying home. But we all kind of had this lockdown personality where things have changed, and we either took it hard or we didn't. But the lockdown might have really increased the possibility of a phenomenon known as the Michelangelo effect, which is the way that we're more likely to develop into the kind of person that we want to be or wish we could be. And even with your romantic partner, it could be the same kind of Michelangelo effect that will help people to become a more positive person. So a lot of people that you and I have spoken to, and we are two of those people, Ron, who, even though we don't like being locked up, it's given us time to reevaluate the things that are important in life, to really stop and take a breath. And that's kind of what that Michelangelo effect is, that they're saying can really permanently help people change their personalities in some ways to become calmer or more focused on what's important in life, and not as scattered, and get back to the basics of family and those types of things. And I really, really see that with so many people. In fact, just today, one of my clients called me up and, you know, thanked me for everything that I've done for them, and said, you know, I've decided to retire now. And she's off, and she's very excited that, and she said, I never would have if it hadn't been for COVID, but it made me really see that this is my right time.
You know, that's interesting that you bring that up, and I totally agree, because I'm obviously very familiar with our relationship and how COVID has affected us, and not in, you know, always negative ways, you know. And for me personally, you know, prior to that, you know me, I'm bouncing all over the United States, right? I'm testifying here and testifying there, going to crime scenes. And I mean, I was doing like 8,000 to 14,000 miles a month. Guess how much traveling I'm doing now?
Zero. Unless it's in the RV.
Okay. So that's worked out pretty good. I enjoy that because it makes me a little bit calmer and not so hectic, where I'm, you know, worried, can I pack in time? Am I going to get stuck in an airport? Am I going to make my planes? You know, all of that. So I completely agree. I feel a lot better about it.
Well, and that's just what it says. And that people who measure their self-worth by really being hyper-competitive are finding that that's not really what it's all about. So I think that it can be a good thing. And although too much of a good thing is not great either. And I've had enough of the COVID.
Well, another fascinating evening and great coffee conversation, my darling. Why don't we tell people how they can hear Dr. Ron and Linda on Talking While Married?
Well, you can go to Talking While Married. You can go to AmericaOutLoud.com, and all of the ways to listen to us are there. Our shows go on podcast right after our live show, and all of the ways that you can listen. So you can listen on Spotify, Stitcher, iHeart, TuneIn, Apple Podcasts, you choose. You can listen to us 24/7 if you want, because the podcasts are there for all of our shows.
Yeah, you and I listen to each other 24/7.
Yeah, we get kind of tired of it, but hopefully nobody else does. And, you know, I also want to mention that Dr. Ron's book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police, is available both on the America Out Loud bookstore and on his website, which is
Dr. Ron, D-R-R-O-N, Martinelli.com.
Yes. And the book is really doing well. It's selling off the shelves. You know, if you'd like it autographed, he'd be happy to do so. When you place an order there, just make a note and ask him to autograph the book for you, and he'd be more than happy to do so. And I think that we can call it an evening.
Let's do that. And we hope you guys have a great evening.